Every spring, America's elite universities witness a peculiar ritual. Brilliant students who once dreamed of curing diseases, revolutionizing education, or building revolutionary technologies line up in business casual attire, clutching polished resumes, waiting to interview with Goldman Sachs and McKinsey. The numbers are staggering. 29% of Harvard graduates funnel into finance or consulting, while another 37% pursue law or medical school. Meanwhile, the small companies that could drive real innovation struggle to attract even a single top graduate. Something has gone profoundly wrong with how we deploy our brightest minds, and it's costing us far more than we realize. Why do our smartest graduates abandon their ambitious dreams for spreadsheets and PowerPoint decks? The answer lies in a recruitment machine so sophisticated it makes college admissions look amateur. Investment banks and consulting firms invest millions, creating what feels like a natural next step: structured interviews, clear deadlines, defined benchmarks. For students who've spent their lives mastering formal processes, it's irresistible. Dylan Matthews, a 2012 Harvard graduate, captures this perfectly. Applying to Wall Street is much closer to college applications than applying anywhere else. Harvard students are really good at formal processes like that, and less good at sorting through thousands of job listings from companies whose reputations they don't know. These firms begin courting sophomores through networking events and summer internships, offering something intoxicating: $100,000 plus salaries, signing bonuses, prestige, and the promise that you can do anything after 2 years here. Meanwhile, a promising startup in Detroit can't compete. No campus presence, no structured training program, no brand recognition. They might offer exciting work and equity, but to a 22-year-old with $100,000 in student debt, that sounds like risk. The consulting firm sounds like security. Professional training rewires your thinking in ways that hinder entrepreneurship. Law school teaches detail orientation, but when will an entrepreneur cite case law? For real legal issues, you'll hire specialists. The deeper shift? In professional services, you analyze and recommend. In startups, you execute and decide with incomplete information. You grow accustomed to comfortable offices, support staff, and inflated salaries. Those golden handcuffs aren't just financial, they're about identity. After introducing yourself as a Goldman analyst for 2 years, joining an unknown startup feels like regression. This pattern shapes entire ecosystems. PayPal alumni founded YouTube, LinkedIn, and Tesla. Former Apple employees created Android and Nest. Organizations spawn similar organizations. Lawyers start law firms. Consultants launch consulting companies. When brilliant graduates choose safer paths, they're determining which companies will exist a decade later. Building a company bears no resemblance to structured paths elite graduates have mastered. No clear deadlines, rubrics, or guaranteed outcomes. Dave McClure of PayPal described it bluntly: a hell of a lot of work for not a hell of a lot of return, with days spent crying in corners, lacking social life, and feeling profoundly isolated. The greatest entrepreneurs aren't born. They're forged through failure. Bill Gates had Trafodata before Microsoft. Mark Cuban couldn't pay his bills early on. Henry Ford's first car company went bankrupt. The key is getting those failures in early, when you can still recover. After his first venture collapsed, leaving him $100,000 in debt at 26, Yang found himself showering at the gym to use free toiletries and surviving on bread samples. Eventually, he realized no one had died, his family still loved him, and he could move forward. Rather than returning to law, he apprenticed himself to experienced entrepreneurs. At MMF Systems, a healthcare software company, he became the liaison between technology and hospital staff, learning to build products rather than just offer services, to systematize processes rather than rely on individual talent. The best entrepreneurs aren't motivated by creativity alone. They're driven by determination to solve problems. Walker Williams exemplified this when his favorite campus bar closed. He built a website where t-shirts would only print after reaching 200 pre-orders. Their five-hour coding project generated $2,000 profit, attracted $200,000 in angel investment, and grew to $2 million through Teespring within a year. Consider two brilliant graduates. One joins Credit Suisse's equity underwriting department, positioning himself near an existing money geyser. The other creates Teespring, a platform eliminating inventory risk for custom merchandise. The first might earn more initially, but which expands the economic pie? Williams's value extended beyond his company. Thousands got apparel supporting causes they cared about, hundreds of thousands were raised for nonprofits, and new jobs emerged in Providence. Investment banking and hedge funds represent zero-sum games. Your gain is someone else's loss. But each viable company adds to the economic total. Countries channeling talent toward value creation rather than rent-seeking see higher innovation and improved living standards. Every brilliant graduate optimizing financial instruments rather than solving problems in renewable energy or healthcare represents lost potential solutions. The choice shapes whether we're building genuine progress or simply shuffling existing wealth. In 2011, Yang launched Venture for America to create a structured entrepreneurship path rivaling Wall Street's appeal. VFA combined consulting firm prestige with startup experience and seed funding, aiming to revitalize American cities while restoring achievement culture to include value creation and risk-taking. Two partnerships accelerated growth. Tony Hsieh pledged $1 million and hired seven fellows for his downtown project in Las Vegas, while Jeff Weiner became advisor and funded fellows to launch an entrepreneurship education nonprofit. The inaugural training camp at Brown University in June 2012 established core principles: view careers as value statements, embrace risk courageously, measure accomplishment through actions rather than titles, and maintain unwavering integrity. A defining moment came when Yang discovered fellows had exploited a meal allowance loophole. Though the amount was small, it contradicted their culture. His emotional response sparked deep reflection, and the group collected money to repay the organization. As one fellow noted, "This is the first time anyone's treated me as an adult, marking their transition from students to professionals with real responsibilities." As VFA expanded to Detroit, New Orleans, and Cincinnati, startups emerged reflecting each region's unique strengths. Education ventures flourished in New Orleans, leveraging Tulane's expertise and post-Katrina transformation. Baltimore spawned health tech innovations, drawing on Johns Hopkins medical research. Detroit produced engineering ventures, building on its manufacturing heritage. These smaller markets offered distinct advantages, significantly lower operational costs, and stronger community support than saturated coastal hubs. Tim Dingman, an electrical engineering graduate, abandoned his PhD to join a Detroit renewable energy startup developing bladeless wind generators. Lower living costs enabled entrepreneurial risks impossible in Silicon Valley. Adie Feinstein at Kickboard in New Orleans gained immediate executive-level responsibility, witnessed the company triple in size while raising substantial venture capital, and became part of New Orleans' vibrant entrepreneurial ecosystem. These success stories demonstrate that innovation thrives anywhere with the right combination of talent, support, and opportunity, and that our obsession with coastal tech hubs may be limiting our innovative potential. By 2014, VFA had raised $6.5 million and expanded to 12 cities, proof of deep hunger for meaningful alternatives. Astrid Shanskerbasi faced skepticism about her entrepreneurial ambitions until VFA validated her energy-producing bike room business. Jim Clue left investment banking after realizing he pursued it because it was the thing to do rather than his passion. Through startups, he discovered work aligned with his values. "I wanted to see my actions have real impact and create change for the common good." This isn't just about creating entrepreneurs. It's about redefining success, shifting from credentials and prestige toward impact and contribution. When our brightest minds build things, they don't just create companies. They rebuild communities and solve pressing problems. The choice isn't between security and risk, it's between living someone else's definition of success and creating your own. The prestigious paths will always be there, polished and gleaming. But when you look back decades from now, will you have spent your talents capturing value that already existed or creating value that changed lives? Smart people should build things, not because it's easy, but because that's how we build a future worth inheriting.